Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf, Yomi Maseches Megillah Daf Chaf. We begin at the Mishnah, which is in the second to the last line of your Testament base. So we have a gizbar, a manager, who manages the Hegdish properties. And he takes some material for himself. Does that constitute Megillah? Says the Mishnah, Notal Evan Aikarash al Hegdish. He took a stone or a beam of Hegdish for personal use. Hareza Loimal. It does not qualify as Megillah. Why? Because he's meant to manage, he's meant to look after the materials belonging to Hegdish. So he didn't really change its Rishus. He didn't really take it out of Hegdish domain because he and the Hegdish are one and the same domain. His Hegdish is synonymous with Hegdish. His domain is synonymous with Hegdish because when he has something, it's really being looked after for Hegdish, so to speak. So even though in his mind he's thinking to take it for himself, but he hasn't really changed its Rishus yet. He hasn't really taken it out of Hegdish possession, so to speak. But if he offers it to somebody else, so once it leaves his rishus, once it leaves his possession, that activates milah. Nusan al-Khabir, the gizbar takes this material and gives it to somebody else. Who more? So the gizbar has committed milah because he orchestrated the diversion. The chaver limal, the recipient, has not committed milah. Because that's the rule when it comes to milah. A person who orchestrates it, arranges it, he's the one that does the milah. And now once the other fellow has it, he can use it. Because as we learned yesterday, once milah is executed, it loses its kedusha. It's considered mundane, chulin materials. Now let's say the gizbar, instead of just taking it, he would have actually used it. Bonam teich besi. He built it into his house. So he took the beam off the Hegdish and he put it into his house. Hariz Leimal. Again, there's no Me'ila yet. Ach Yidur Tachteo B'Shavar Prut, unless he sits beneath it, you know, under the rain, under the sun, he has Anna, valued at a Pruta. Now, the obvious question is, by merely building into the house, he's already changing its designation, he made it part of his house. That in itself should be Hanna. We'll see in the Gemara. Not a putish of Hegdish. Once again, back to the Gizbar, who's in charge of the Hegdish funds. So he pulls out a dollar, puts it in his pocket. That's not Mila, because, like we said, him and Hegdish are the same possession, are the same domain. Not a putish of Hegdish. He took a prut out of Hegdish. That's not Mila. But he gave it to somebody else. He committed Mila, but his recipient has not. Nasana Labala. Let's say the gizbar takes the money and inadvertently gives it to the bathhouse attendant as a fee for future use. Avishalay Rachat, small, even though he hadn't yet bathed in the bathhouse, he hadn't really utilized and actualized that entrance fee. Mal, he committed milah. You know why? Because he got the right to use it. So you already got something in exchange. Because the bathhouse attendant, in effect, tells him, here, come on in, you're invited. Look, the bathhouse is open wide for you. Come inside, use it. Since he granted him that right, that privilege, he already received this anoa from the Hegdish money, and that's an act of milah. One more point. What about combining? So if a fellow took Hegdish food worth a pruta, part of it he ate, part of it he served his friend. He took something from Hegdish, he enjoyed it, a half a pruta worth, and he offered his friend as well. He had a achila, he offered his friend some hana, or vice versa. They have half a pruta of his hana in conjunction with the half a pruta of his friend's eating, mitzdarfin, zeim zeh, afilu zman rubi, they're combined, they're joined together, even if it happened over a long period of time, like we learned the other day, The orchestrator is fully responsible. Okay, let's go back to the Mishnah. He took the beam, he took the building material. The Mishnah says, if he took it for his own use, there's no me'ila yet. Unless he gave it to somebody else. What's the difference? Ma'ishnahu, ma'ishnachavir, either way. He just diverted Hegdash material, ma'ishmol. Begizbar, we're talking about the manager. Building manager, ha'masuro is like askinan, the fellow who was given the construction material to look after. So while it's still in his domain, even though he's diverting it for personal use, that's not considered a change of designation. Because as we said, that's his job to manage, to look after the Hegdash materials, whoever he is. If it's under his care, technically it's still in the Hegdash possession. So it's not Mila, as opposed to giving it to somebody else. That's a true diversion. That's considered Mila. But if the Gizbar took the material and actually put it into his house, installed it in his bias, that can trigger Mila, provided that he enjoyed it. He sat underneath it, he was protected from the elements. Now why do you need that element of actual Hano? The mere installation, adding it to your house, wouldn't you think that is considered a drastic change of designation? It became part of your house. And, you know, certainly it's considered as having lost Hegdish status there. It's no longer in the Hegdish possession. It's in your house, built into your property. Why do you have to have that requirement to reside underneath it? Given the shani, once he changed it, it was now turned into this person's house. Mal, why is that not Mila Amarav? He didn't really install it permanently. He just placed it loosely over the hole in the roof, right? Amarav Kanshenich Al Piyaruba, there was this opening in the roof, this window, the skylight, and he placed the beam over it. So the actual placement is not a change, not a drastic change. It still can be just pulled off. And therefore, there's no me'ila. Unless they actually sat beneath it and used it to protect himself from the elements, and that is considered a hano, which qualifies as me'ila. Okay, but once he built it, and you're telling me it would be considered me'ila, theoretically, if he would have installed it permanently, miyasma, that would be considered a mi'ila. Now, we had a rule the other day that mi'ila only applies to something detached from the ground, but something which is mechubar lakarka has no mi'ila. So why would there be mi'ila on the stone which was now attached to the ground? It's mechubar lakarka. Lema, miyasayel l'rab, perhaps it can be a support to Rav, who likewise holds that something, some material that had been detached and now built into the ground is categorized as something detached, has a status of tolush, because originally it was detached. Rav tells regarding a different matter, regarding Avodah Zarah. We have a similar rule, a person worships Mechubar Lakarka, it doesn't get affected, it doesn't become Osra. But if he worships something detached, an idol, it becomes also. What if it's something in between? It was detached, building material, which is now attached to the ground. Amarav, Hamashtachal Abayis Asari, a person bows to a building, since it's comprised of building materials which had been detached until construction, we consider it Tolish. It's qualified as Tolish. And likewise, over here, that's the reason why there's Me'ila on this stone, which is now attached, because it had been detached until now. Omar Rav Achved Rava, no. You can't compare one to the other. Perhaps regarding Avodah Zarah, it wouldn't get affected, but this person's bowing, it's attached to the ground, Mechubar Lakarka. Mila works differently. Hano. Haniris Leinayim Osra Tera. Tera forbade. Hano, which is discernible, which is visible, which means to say like this. Since, as he's building the stone, as he's pushing the stone into the brick line, before it's actually attached, at that point he's having a no, he's making it part of his building while still detached, that activates Mila, even though ultimately it's going to become attached, and mechubal karka is free of mila. But since as he begins using it, as he begins installing it, at that point, at that stage, it's still detached. So it's seen, it's appreciated, so to speak, it's noticeable as it's going into the building. That's enough to be considered talush for triggering of mi'ilah. So the mi'ilah relates to that point where it's still detached and in the process of being installed. But let's say, for example, Hegdash owns a building. They purchased a building and there's no mi'ilah on something which is mechubar l'karka. We're talking that it was something off the ground and he used it, installed it at his house. So as he's putting it in, it's not yet attached. And that's what triggers the mi'ilah. Lema, misayaleh, perhaps we can support Rav's concept that detached, which became detached, is still quantified as detached. From a different price. Lema, misayaleh. Hador b'veis shel hegdish. Kimish nenem menemah. Person lives, he resides in a home belonging to hegdish. As soon as he has anov shal putti, this does mi'ilah. That can only be explained if we learn that these stones are considered like detached materials, since they were so before installment. Amr Shlakish, no, Hasam Bishik Disha Base Banai. We're talking about a unique case where it's not like Hegdish purchased a building. He was Magdish the materials, the stones, before he built it in. He constructed it. So since he was Magdish it while still detached, in which case Mi'ilah would apply at that point, it does not lose that Mi'ilah potential, even after being installed in the building. Let's say it was built up and then, so first he built the building, then he was Magdish it. My, what are you saying? Lo'imad, it wouldn't be Mi'ilah? Because it never had that potential, never had that moment of Tolish Min HaKarka, because Hegdish acquired it only post-construction as a in-ground facility. If that's the case, my area roit v'tani. So why did the Brice have to go run over to a different case to highlight a mi'ilah-free situation? A person lived in a unit which was sort of like a cave, which was attached to the ground from way back, right? It wasn't built that way. It was a natural, unit. Lo'imah, there's no mi'ilah. Why? Because it's mechubar l'karka. So that's an example of mi'ilah-free facilities. Why doesn't just the Braisa speak about a regular construction, which was turned into hegdish post-construction, which is also mila-free. Leima, hador b'bayish, should just say a case of hador b'bayish l'avonim, shabonim sevekdish, leima. Braisa, the same money could have said, a bigger chiddush, that person lives in a b'bayish l'avonim, a stone structure, which had been built before being designated as hegdish. So since there was no mila option, while in detached form, leima, there's no mila. If in fact that is so, right, you're making this distinction. Mila only applies to tolish min hakarka, something which is not mechubar, but depends. If it was in a state of hegdish while in construction state, while in a material state, then the mi'ilah status carries on even post-construction. But if it was turned to hegdish only post-construction, never had a window of opportunity, never had a taller state where it belonged to hegdish. There's no mi'ilah. So why doesn't the Braisa highlight that case? Amri's, the answer was like this. That's not so clear-cut. It's given to confusion. Depends what kind of building, depends when it was built, right? Hapsikale. The Braisa would prefer speaking about a straightforward case. A cave in the ground is always mechubar. There's no meal. There's no question there. Halepsikle, a case of a stone structure. Well, it depends. It only depends if it was designated as hegdish while still in its construction, in its material form. Then, yeah, the meal status carries on into the built structure. But if it was turned hegdish post-construct, there's no meal. So instead of getting into nitty-gritties, the Braisa just cited a clear-cut example. So that's clear and understood. Harun Lachanan. Okay, so let's just recap. We had the Chiddush in the Mishnah about a Gizbar, who's authorized to look after the Hegdish materials, in which case if he moves things around, it's not Me'ilah, unless he actually diverts it. He gives it to somebody else. Or puts it into this house. Now, if he builds into the house, then itself would be considered a milah. But if it's not built in permanently, it's just placed on top. So there he has to have actual use of hanosh or pruta to be considered milah. Now, what if it's actually built in? So we know that mechubar l'karka typically is not susceptible to milah. But here it's different because since while he's putting it in, it's visibly hegdash material being used. That can trigger the, that will trigger the milah. Likewise, a person was manglish materials and then he built it as a hegdash facility, even though it's a complete built facility. Since there was milah option pre construction, milah status still continues on. Rav is a chiddush that by vedazara as well. Even though mechubar l'karka is not susceptible to isra vedazara, it doesn't become also when you bow to it. But if it had been detached and then built in. We just, we reckon with the fact that it was construction material and we classified it as talish. There was a question whether we can compare it to our Mishnah. And the Gemara said, no, Mila works with a different system, as we explained. Okay, we turn to the next parak. Says the Mishnah, Shaliach, Shosus Lichusoi. If the messenger did his job, Bala Bayisma, the sender, the homeowner, so to speak, the one who had the authority over the hegdish material. So let's say Reuven was the Baal Habayis. He had hegdish material in his jurisdiction, and he asked Shimon to go spend it for him. If Shimon, the shaliach, the messenger, did his job, executed his instructions faithfully, then guess what? You know who's responsible? The Baal Habayis, Reuven. Unlike throughout the entire Torah, where we say just the opposite. When a person sends somebody to do an avira on his behalf, who's responsible? The perpetrator. It's your fault. You can't blame it on the sender. In fact, there's an expression in the Gemara that explains this. Divrei harav v'divrei hatalmid. If one has a choice between following the words of the master, in this case Hashem, the master of the universe, versus the words of the talmid, of the student, of the person, the human being who sent him, who do you listen to? Of course Hashem. So it's your prerogative, it's your choice. You're accountable. Well, here it's different. This is based on the connection to Truma, which we had the other day, where we have the concept of a shlichus, right? The farmer asks somebody to do Truma on his behalf. When he does that Truma properly, it counts on behalf of the farmer. Likewise, by shlichus, it's about orchestrating, it's about arranging the me'ilah. So if one asks somebody to do the me'ilah, the asker, the sender, the Baal Bayis, he is ma'al. But that's only if he did his job properly. If he followed instructions. But if he did his own thing, well, he also, shlichus, he didn't do his job properly. He did something else instead. Ashliach ma'al. In this case, Ashliach is fully responsible. Look, you didn't follow the words of the Baal Bayis. He's not responsible. Ketzer, for example. Omer loy, so Reuven the Baal Bayis, who's hosting some guests, and he happens to have some hegdish meat in his possession. Amalei, so he tells the waiter, tells Shimon, Tein basra l'orchin. Could you please serve meat to our guests? And what does Shimon do? Instead of serving him regular meat, he served him liver, which technically is fleishigs, but it's not really labeled meat. You refer to liver as liver. So he gave them liver, which also happened to be hegdish. V'nosam lehem kaved. He gave them kavod. Or just the opposite. Kavod. Please serve them liver. V'nosan hem basar, serve them meat. In this case, since he deviated, ha-shaliach mal, who's responsible? The shaliach. Another example of deviation. Amar lo yitein lehem chaticha chaticha. Reuven asks the waiter, serve them one piece of meat per person. And Shimon got generous. And he says, V'oimer lehem, he tells them, V'oimer tzlu shtayim shtayim. He says, here, take two apiece. So the first was a fulfillment of the shlichas, but the second one was an addition, his own addition. And what did they do? They got super generous. V'heim notlu shalosh. Shalosh, they took three apiece. In this case, kula malu, all three committed milah, Reuven, Shimon, and the guest. Why? Because the first piece was served on account of Reuven's instruction. So that wish was fulfilled. The second piece was the waiter's orchestration. The third piece was the guests. doing. So all three committed Mila. It turned out like this. It would seem in the Mishnah that Basar and Kavod, although they're close in nature, they're technically in the both in the meat family, but then since there's some disparity in terms of labeling, and typically if you would ask somebody to buy you meat or to serve meat, he should come back and check with you if he only found liver. They're close enough, but not the same thing, right? So something which would require a double check, a confirmation, a consultation, to ensure that in fact he wants this too. So on the one hand, it does identify as meat, it does get labeled as meat, it's close enough to actual meat, but it's not exactly. The Mishnah considers that to be a separate item, and that explains why if you serve them liver instead of meat, the Baal Bayis is not responsible. Mantana, so who's the holder of this position, of this opinion, the Chol Milsa, that in any matter, in any item, the Mimloch Allah Shliach, Mimloch means to go and check and confirm, consult, on which the Shliach would have to go back and double check. Did you have this in mind too? Meaning it's not so far apart that he wouldn't even bother checking. Basically, we have three types: something which is exactly the same, something which is so extremely different that he wouldn't even entertain it as a possibility. He wouldn't even come back to check. You have something in the middle. Liver and meat, something in the middle. It's close enough, but it's not the same. He has to come back and check before he proceeds, right? Tarti mili havi, that makes it a separate thing. It makes them two. And that's why if it's meat instead of liver, the shliach is responsible, not the homeowner. Who's the opinion holder? Rav Chisda like Rav Akiva. Not like Rabbi Kiva. According to Rabbi Kiva, it's close enough. It's loosely related. It's in the same family. It's considered one and the same regarding these matters. This is not, we have a Mishnah back in the Doran. So there it's also a question of definitions. I make a vow to refrain from X and Y is close enough, but it's not exactly X. Does it cover Y as well? That's not. Hanoidim and Hayarak. Mid and Eder. To keep all vegetables. Now, typically vegetables refer to carrots, potatoes. What about gourds, melons, pumpkins? Mutu b'diluin, you could have diluin. So although it's in the general vegetable family, it's not typically what people refer to when they say vegetables. Rabbi Kiva Oyser, he says it's covered under the same nether. The fact is it's close enough. The fact is, if you would send somebody to buy you vegetables and he only finds diluin, he'll come back and check with you. Apparently there's some relation, there's some connection. It's in the same family. And likewise, wouldn't he consider meat and liver close enough as well? So why does our mission say it's considered a deviation? Abaye Omar Afilu Tim Rabbi Kiva. You know what? Our mission can follow Rabbi Kiva as well. That's all good and well by neder. I said vegetables. Well, it loosely covers, all types of. But when I send somebody to buy, or I send somebody to serve, and it's not the same exact, even though it's a distant cousin, but he would have to come back. Right? Etiquette would require him coming back and checking with me. Wouldn't he have to come check with me? And in the case of the liver and the meat, the mission, he didn't come check. So I'm not responsible. When the Chacham presented this solution to Rava, in the name of Abaye, Omar Lu, he says, great. Great resolution. Omar Lu, Shaper Kamer Nachmeni. Nachmeni is Abaye. Some say he was called Nachmeni by Rabba who raised him. When Abaye was an orphan, and he named him Nachmeni after Abaye's father, or some say it was actually Nachmeni is actually Rabba's father's name, and he didn't want to. Abaye was Rabba's father's name. He didn't want to call the adoptee outright with his own father's name, so he called him Nachmeni. Some say that Abaye is an acronym, Rosh Tevis, for the words in the pasuk Asher Bacha Yerucham Yasan. To evoke compassion on Abaye, who was a Yosem. In any case, Rebbe was impressed. He says, wow. Abaye said, well, that's the proper resolution to this question. Okay, speaking of which, so we have Machlekes regarding the Dorim. He says, no vegetables. Tanakama says, Deluan is not technically a vegetable. Rabbi Kiva says it's close enough and it's covered. Man Tana de Polgalit Rabbi Kiva. So we know Rabbi Kiva by name. Who's the authority that disagrees with Rabbi Kiva? And when there's some slight disparity, it's not covered. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, it's him. The Sani, we find a similar discussion regarding meat. Hanoidim and Abbasar, I'm off meat. Is that referred to only prime meat? What about secondary cuts of meat? Also, b'chol mine basar. It covers everything. This is like Rabbi Kiva, right? It covers all types. Basar b'roish, b'raglayim, the meat of the head, of the feet, b'kana, of the connected to the windpipe, like the lungs, that b'kaveit, and liver as well, u'balev, heart, basar b'basar eifos, even fowl, a chicken is also included. But not fish or grasshoppers. That's a class of its own. It doesn't need shechit. It's own different world. Umotu b'basar dogim chagavim, fish or grasshopper out of the equation. So this is pretty much in line with Rabbi Akiva, that the term meat covers all variations. However, Shimon Gamliel Matir, he says you're allowed to have anything which is not considered prime meat, b'roish, b'raglayim, b'kanam, b'kavad, b'ayfas, b'dogim chagavim. V'chein haya. Rabbi Shem, likewise, you would tell us, don't ever pay standard, meat price for kravayim, for innards, for secondary, lesser quality pieces of meat. The innards of the animal, lav basar hein. It's not really labeled meat. It's not really qualified. It doesn't qualify as real meat. But whoever eats them, lav barnish inish, it's not a person. I mean to say, Farish Rashi explains, meaning, don't value it as regular meat. Don't pay regular meat price for it. It's a tier below it. Okay, so according to him, when a person is noider from meat, it doesn't cover these secondaries. Unlike Rabbi Akiva, who says it's all in the family and that's enough. Now, Utanakam, according to the first opinion, that covers pretty much everything. Basar covers everything, but he leaves out fish. Leaves out grasshoppers, but he does cover chicken. What's the difference? Why is he covering chicken? Because a shopper who was sent to buy bisur d'chiyusa, animal meat, regular meat, would tend to come back and say, look, I didn't find it, and I brought you instead bisur d'sifra, I brought you a chicken. So, it's close enough, and if that's the case. The same with fish. Look, if he has nothing else, he'll come back with fish. A person's accustomed to saying, I couldn't find regular animal meat, I bought you fish. I'm not, but you're right, in general you're right, but here we're talking about a fellow who in any case has an aversion to fish, it's unhealthy for him today, so that wasn't really part of the equation. It's the day that they drew blood from him. He has to keep off fish. The person wouldn't eat fish, it's dangerous. So the same with chicken. You wouldn't eat chicken either on that day. Shmuel teaches us. Shmuel was an expert doctor. He would say the Masaycha Rachat Sifra, a person who drew blood and has bird meat, Parach Libekit Sifra, his heart will fly away like a bird. He'll faint. It's not healthy. Vaitani, we find the same in the Brice in Makiz and Dam. After the Hakaz, at least they may have a big Suda to replenish the blood supply, but keep off fish, birds, or heavily salted meat. El Rapop, but you're right, we're not talking about that day, we're talking about a different day, where he keeps off fish specifically. Any day where his eyes are hurting, asking him, we're speaking about that day, he wouldn't eat fish anyway, so it's not part of the equation. But otherwise, any other type of meat is included. Okay, so bottom line. We have a discussion regarding terminology. Binded Dorim, Vimachlekes, does it cover only specifically that type? Like Yarak is only Yarak, not Luim, Basar is only prime meat and not the others. Or Kondor Akiva covers everything which is loosely identified with this term. And regarding Mi'ila, Gemara concluded, all agree, even something which is loosely related would not cut it because he should come back and check. And if he proceeds without double checking, it's his doing. So in the case of the three pieces, I asked him to serve one, he offered two, and we all are responsible. Why? It's a new offering. I said one, he gave two. It's a whole different thing. Shmamina, perhaps we can conclude from here. Moisiv al shlichusi av shliach, person adds an amount to the authorized amount. It's still considered a fulfillment of his job regarding the first amount. So you don't treat it like a totally new entity. There's the original plus the addition. And this pertains to halachis of buying and selling. Let's say I ask somebody to, you know, sell 50 pounds of apples and goes and sells 75. Or Rashi brings the case of the more appropriate, the case of the of property, right? I asked him to sell an acre, he sold 2 acres. So is it considered an addition? Am I still committed to that first acre? Do I say no? It's a brand new transaction which I don't authorize. The whole thing is null and void. The Mishnah sounds like it's an addition. It's not a new thing. It's the old plus a bit new. Is that true? Amar Rav Sheshes? No, not necessarily. The Amar Shliach Toil Achas Midaitiv Achas Midaitiv. Shliach specified. Look, it's not a new offering. Here is a tray of meat, one from the gracious host and the second one from the gracious waiter. Achas Midaitiv Achas Midaitiv. So he's clearly adding. He's not repackaging it into a new double, two-piece offer. So here certainly it's considered the original offering plus. And the original offering is still intact. And that's on the host's account. And the chiddush is, maldatema, perhaps we can argue, akash liach shlichus libal bayis. Maybe even in this case, the waiter, you know, hijacked the hosting. He overtook it and he replaced the bal bayis's offering. In which case, bal bayis should not be responsible at all. Kamashman, the answer is yes. Yeah, the fact is, the first meat was still on account of the host, and for that he's responsible. Okay, so we have an interesting chiddush. Typically we say ein shliach l'dvar aveira, except for some exceptions, one of which is me'ila, and it's conditioned upon doing shlichusa. You gotta do the job, otherwise if he does his own thing, such as liver instead of meat, it's the shliach's fault. But if he adds and he specified, look, I'm just adding, in that case everybody is equally responsible. All the best to you, Hatzlacha Rabbah.